In America's colonial days, there was a common practice in the Anglican churches to have printed up in large words the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, and the Ten Commandments. These were panels that they put on the walls of the Anglican churches. In fact, there's even a name for this phenomenon. It is a reredos. Well, included in the reredos was the Apostles' Creed, as I say, and included in the Apostles' Creed is the part about we believe in the resurrection of Jesus. And in fact, the resurrection of Jesus from the dead is the cornerstone of historic Christianity. Is it possible, and personally I think it is, that there is scientific evidence for the resurrection of Jesus? I refer to the Shroud of Turin, a 14-by-3-foot linen cloth that is believed by many to have been the actual burial cloth of Jesus of Nazareth. One man in our time who's done so much to present information about the Shroud is British filmmaker David Rolfe. He's made about 5 or 6 films on the subject, or 4 to 6, including the classic documentary, The Silent Witness. David Rolfe joins us now on Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And by the way, David Rolfe has a very interesting million-dollar challenge he'll tell you about. But Mr. Rolfe, it is such an honor to talk with you. I love your work. I've seen your films multiple times, particularly The Silent Witness. But thank you for joining us.
Well, my pleasure, and thank you for taking news of my the subject in general and my new film in particular to your community and audience.
Sure. And whocanhebe.com is a website for more information. But I want you to, first of all, tell me why you believe the Shroud is authentic, and then we'll get into the million-dollar challenge.
Well, I suppose one of the reasons that the Shroud made such a big impression on me is that from a very early age, I became interested in photography. And my parents indulged me with a dark room in our house, and I spent hours taking black and white pictures and putting them into my enlarger and developing and printing them. Now, I'm sure many of your listeners will probably have done the same thing.
Yes, I did. I used to have a little box camera, an old-fashioned one, and I love to do that, but I never got as far as you did. Go ahead.
Okay, well, of course, in this digital age, that's all bypassed. You just take your phone out and you've got a picture. But when you made a print, it was necessary. You processed the film and you placed the negative in a lighthouse on the top of the enlarger. And a very powerful beam of energy, or light, shall we say, was sent through the negative, and that went onto the photosensitive paper, and the chemical process, the reaction between the light on the way that the paper was sensitized, enabled you then to develop that chemically to produce the print. Now, here... And I only realized this aspect of it relatively recently. It isn't what got me into the subject, but here I am with a lot of energy coming from a very fixed source down through a negative and creating an image. And one of the things, if anyone who's ever done anything with an enlarger, you can use your hands to adjust the image across from side to side. And you can see how energy, and that's, of course, what we're talking about here, because the light is nothing other than a focused beam of energy, can very easily, as it did with a sensitized paper, make an image. Now, what you have with the Shroud of Turin, there's no enlarger, obviously, involved. But what there is the evidence of energy. In this case, an unquantifiably large amount of energy. And if it wasn't for the fact that this burst of energy was so infinitesimally short-lived, a fraction of a microsecond, it would have blown up the whole of Jerusalem. That's how much energy was involved. But energy is a factor of power over time. And if the energy is released over such a short period of time, you could create the image that we see on the Shroud of Turin, so that the density of the image is directly proportional to the distance the body was to the cloth at the moment the energy was released. So, for example, where the cloth was touching the cloth, which is the tip of the nose, the image is darker. Where the image is in the eye socket, which of course is not touching the cloth, the image is less intense. And this repeats itself over the entire body. So those parts closer to the shroud are darker as it falls off around the chest, around the hips, around the legs. It just falls off as you'd expect a light to do when it hits an object like that. And miraculously, this is completely homogeneous over the cloth, so that when with using modern equipment, scanning equipment, you scan that image and you combine that with CGI technology that's now available for the movies, you're able to create a 3D model of Christ lying in the tomb. And that is the climax of the Who Can You Be film. And if anybody can show me how that could possibly have been done at any time in history, let alone the Middle Ages, then at the moment that this challenge is limited to the British Museum and $1 million. But who knows what I'll do with that challenge if the British Museum don't open it up. But indeed, when I was in America recently, I did extend the challenge to anybody in America who wanted to take it on. So if any of your listeners would like the chance to get $1 million for something that the British Museum said was something that some medieval forger just faked up and flogged off, it's waiting for them.
And that if they try to replicate the Shroud of Turin, they have to use technology that was as old as 1390 or older, correct? 1390 being the year go ahead.
We know the shroud is at least medieval. So as long as they're using technology no later than that, then they'll win $1 million.
Okay, and do you think anybody's going to try?
Well, interestingly, the list of the actual characteristics of the image, the physical characteristics, are listed on the Who Can You Be website. And my guess is that once they actually, anybody who fancies their chances, takes a look at what they've actually got to achieve. I mean, I told you about the infinitesimally short period of time that energy was released. So much so that if you know what the average linen cloth thickness is likely to be, well, the image does not penetrate beyond the topmost fibrils of that cloth, which in its, you would have expected a scorch, like on an ironing board you might get, would actually penetrate and go right through the cloth. But the only physical explanation for this phenomenon is, as I've said, an unbelievable amount of energy, but an infinitesimally short period of time. Now, those characteristics of the image are totally undisputed. There's nothing controversial about those, and they're listed. And my guess is that anybody who thinks, great, this is my opportunity to pick up $1 million, once they see what they've got to do, my guess is that the challenge will not even be attempted.
All right, and let me just fill in a couple of gaps here, just since we haven't mentioned this before. For those not familiar with the shroud, there are wounds that the man in the shroud experienced, including the crown of thorns, including being stabbed in the spear, you know, by a spear rather, a Roman spear, in fact, Roman flagrums. He was scourged, I believe, up to 120 times, which means that the cat of nine tails or whatever that they were using, they had three strands with these flagrums, and as I understand it, bits and pieces of the flesh were torn out as he was being scourged. And then you have the nails through the wrist, and then also the nails at the feet through the heel Very interesting. So anything you want to comment on this? Because I understand, you know, like from your films, you've been showing how, well, in medieval art, they would always have the nail go through the palm. Well, you have soft tissue in the palm, and that wouldn't hold up a body. But we see in the shroud, just like we see in archaeological remains of a crucified man, that it would go through the wrist and so on.
Absolutely. And until relatively recently, it was only the force of logic and common sense to actually describe what the actual limitations of crucifixion were. Oh, thankfully, thanks to the Emperor Constantine in the 4th century, who became a Christian and banned crucifixion from that moment on in the Roman domain, the actual practice of crucifixion died out. People didn't know how it was done. And so when it came to the flourishing of medieval art, they just made assumptions about crucifixion. So if you look at any of the great classical medieval paintings, you will find that the image, the nails are shown going through the palms of the hands and through the front of the soles of the feet with one foot over the other. And as you quite rightly said, we now know that that's not possible, because the final cause of death in crucifixion was suffocation. The whole methodology, as far as the Romans were concerned, is that you were nailed in such a way that if you just hung by your arms with your hands nailed, it was impossible to breathe. And so in order to breathe, you were forced to push down on your nailed feet in order to be able to actually breathe. And then once you'd got some oxygen in your lungs, you sagged back down again. So there was this kind of ghastly seesaw. And interestingly, if you look at the blood flows on the wrists and the feet, you can see those two positions, because the arms go in as they as Jesus took the weight on his arms, the arms take in one position, and when he sags back down again, they go into another position, and you can see the two rivulets of blood that reflect those two positions. Every single detail, every single aspect, every time you cross-examine what the shroud represents on that piece of cloth, you cannot find, to mix metaphors, its Achilles heel. Everything that conforms with what we now know of the Roman crucifixion. So much so that I think in the last few years they actually discovered a burial of a crucifixion, and that's exactly where the nails were.
Boy, we only have a minute left. Is there any way when we finish this particular segment, I could have you for another 15 minutes? Is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, great. You're doing a fantastic job. Okay, we have about 1 minute left. And when I have you back, I'll ask you about things like the sedarium and so forth. But I do want to say this. Scientists in 1978 did get 120 hours around the clock to examine the shroud with, you know, while they were holding, you know, having gloves on. And many of them expected, oh, we're going to prove this is a fake within 10 minutes. And then years later, they basically said, well, we don't know what this is, but we know that it wasn't created by an artist. 20 seconds, concluding thought.
Absolutely. And I was closely involved with that test being set up. It was a very, very sophisticated operation. It involved a jumbo jet full of equipment being flown over by the Shroud of Turin Research Project. And I'm pleased to say, through the offices of one of the most important people as far as the shroud is concerned, Father Peter Rinaldi,
okay,
from Turin, who went to New York, the profits from my first film called The Sign of Witness, the profits of my first film went to pay a substantial part of the expenses of that scientific examination.
That is fantastic. And whocanhebe.com for more information. And it's great to talk with you, David. We'll continue this in another segment.